Welcome to a very special episode of Redemption, taped at last month's fourth Intergovernmental Negotiating Committee meeting in Ottawa, Canada. At this pivotal gathering, global governments work tirelessly to develop the internationally legally binding instrument on plastic pollution, more commonly known as the Global Plastics Treaty. This is a crucial international effort aimed at curbing plastic pollution. The meeting attracted a diverse group of stakeholders, including observers from various organizations, whose contributions will be vital in shaping a fair and effective treaty later this year. But today, we'll explore a couple different perspectives on the treaty and its impact on various groups. Amid the hustle and bustle of the INC4 venue in Ottawa, I had the opportunity to sit down with Taylor Cass Talbot, Advocacy Coordinator for the International Alliance of Waste Pickers, and Clara Vezic, Deputy Director at the Office of Policy and Developmental Analysis for CalRecycle in California. Before we dig into our discussions from Ottawa, let's quickly recap the progress of the treaty negotiations up to this point. From INC1 through INC3, negotiations began, laying the groundwork by identifying key issues and stakeholder roles. Major strides were made in INC3 in Nairobi in November 2023, where draft frameworks began to take shape, addressing critical points like reduction targets, financing mechanisms, and reporting requirements. At INC4, negotiators aimed to advance the text of the Plastics Treaty and to secure agreement on the intersessional work leading up to INC5, which will take place later this year. Enjoy this special live recording amidst all the action at INC4. Please excuse any background noise as we capture the energetic atmosphere of the venue. I'm joined by Taylor Cass Talbot, Advocacy Coordinator for IAWP, the International Alliance of Waste Pickers. Taylor, could you please give our listeners a brief overview of the work that you do and what your main expectations are from INC4?
Yeah, well, our work with the Plastics Treaty has really started since the beginning of UNEA, when it launched the Plastics Treaty. We've been involved in every negotiation since then, primarily pushing for both a just transition as a core element of the Plastics Treaty, as well as insisting that waste pickers be mentioned and defined within that treaty. We know that globally, waste pickers collect more or less 60% of the plastic that's collected for recycling. We know that that happens in the Global North and Global South alike, but we also know that waste pickers do depend on plastics. In some places, as much as 60% of their income is dependent on plastics now, and that's really only increasing as we see so many materials shifting from metals and papers to plastics, and in particular, non-valuable plastics, which of course is one of the key concerns for waste pickers.
What are the implications of different materials for waste pickers? What are some of the concerns and issues that you see arising from not only the plastic pollution, but the waste picker's role in collecting plastic?
Yeah, well, our delegation and waste pickers generally, broadly across the International Alliance of Waste Pickers, they do advocate for a reduction in plastics because so many workers are in dump sites or communities with lack of adequate waste collection, and so they're having to burn their plastics, or they're, you know, clogging up the drains or clogging up rivers nearby. So we do see this as a really serious environmental justice issue. And we are seeing an increasing number of plastics entering the packaging marketplace that just have no value. Multi-layer package, it's hard to collect, it's not very useful, and oftentimes the end-of-line market is co-processing in cement kilns or incineration. And so we're pretty adamant that, yes, we do need to reduce plastics and that the industry shouldn't be using waste picker livelihoods as an excuse for perpetuating plastic production. However, we're pretty insistent as well that reuse and repair livelihoods need to be based on existing waste picker-based systems and that they incorporate waste pickers into those jobs, because so often waste pickers come from family lineages that were once involved in reuse and repair of materials.
There's a lot of unknowns in terms of how a reuse system could support waste pickers, but what are some of the things that you think should be goalposts in exploring and developing reuse solutions that are inclusive and equitable?
Yeah, absolutely. First of all, a lot of waste picker groups are already involved in reuse and repair, whether it be through flea markets in Europe. I mean, that's primarily the nature of waste pickers, is vending in the streets or in reuse and secondhand markets. A lot of waste pickers are now getting involved in India. For example, they're getting involved in zero waste event waste management, so they're providing reusable dishware and whatnot and composting. And there's a lot of interest, too, in upcycling in these things. But what we have seen is that it's far easier to get contracts in recycling or waste collection than it is to have any real substantial income from reuse and repair. Mm-hmm. So we need policies that incentivize that financially, but we also really need provisions for waste pickers in those policies, because all around the world, where we see the most successful examples of waste pickers being integrated into more decent informal or regularized work, it's where they are mentioned and defined in those policies.
I'm noticing at INC4 the huge presence of the industry, and I mean brands. There's a lot of talk about the role of waste pickers and the importance of their work and contributions. I'm intentionally kind of simplifying things, but do you see industry as friend or foe or TBD?
Look, at the local level, a lot of waste picker organizations do have to negotiate with companies and industry, if not to sell materials directly to them, but also now with the rise of extended producer responsibility, it's forcing us to engage with producer responsibility organizations. Yeah. So we have to maintain those relationships. But we're also acutely aware that, particularly now with the popularity of waste pickers in the context of the treaty, a lot of groups are very willing to appropriate the voices of waste pickers to meet their own political desires. And we're very aware of that. We are pretty hardline about resisting that. And we try to articulate as much as possible that we're here representing waste pickers. We're not here to represent any other party in this treaty process.
A legally binding instrument would change how we deal with plastic at all levels. This would affect businesses, governments, and ultimately how plastic packaging is produced, consumed, and collected. So, talking a little bit more from kind of a grassroots perspective, what provisions do you think are crucial to ensuring social inclusion and fair labor practices?
We feel that the article on just transition needs to stay. We're happy with option one with some slight tweaks. And we would also like to see just transition mentioned throughout the treaty, mm-hmm. so that it's a bit more of a holistic approach in the preamble, in the section on waste management, for example, and that there be reporting requirements so that member states are required to actually report on progress, and that the indicators for that reporting are established with relevant stakeholders, including waste pickers. And then, of course, like I mentioned, we really insist that waste pickers and other potentially affected workers be mentioned and defined within the treaty.
You mentioned EPR. Maybe we could talk a little bit about how extended producer responsibility plays a role in this and what steps can be taken to develop EPR systems that promote social inclusion rather than marginalization of waste pickers.
One, believing that waste pickers need to be involved in the development of these policies, that systems should as much as possible be based on some existing informal collection system so that we know how to provide access to materials and commercialization points, adequate labor and social protections within extended producer responsibility, which so often is lacking from these laws, and opportunities for advancement in the value chain. It's good if waste pickers can have access to materials, but if there's a glass ceiling there and there's no opportunity for them to actually advance into implementation of the system or operation or into kind of more formal and decent or scheduled work, then it is a system that's exploiting cheap and underpaid labor. We need to ensure that there are these pathways. For example, when you're talking about bottle deposit systems, what opportunities are there for organizations of waste pickers to actually move into the operation of their own depot? Is mm-hmm. there a handling fee or some kind of a premium that enables them to be paid for the amount of materials that they're processing so that they can actually pay the labor to do the work and pay for the property and whatnot?
We're seeing at INC4, you know, a pretty large delegation. So how do you see waste picker organizations represented in these negotiations, and where would you like to see it go further?
We do feel fairly well represented. We seem to be gaining a lot of momentum in terms of the number of member states that are recognizing waste pickers, that are insisting on our inclusion in this treaty. And a lot of that most of that has to do with, one, a strong team. Yes, we're providing that capacity building, but we're also bringing in leaders from mostly national movements who are very well versed in these issues because they face them every single day and they're involved in EPR negotiations in their country. So oftentimes, we can let our delegation free and they do their own negotiating. They're building their own relationships with their member states or with their regional member states, and they follow up with them, not just at the INCs, but also intersessionally in their own countries. So we would like to see that continue and to grow, and we would like to see more member states take interest. We're seeing more Global North countries take interest, and that's really exciting because for so long, it really hasn't been recognized that waste pickers even existed in a lot of our countries, like the United States. So I would like to see that continue to grow, and I would like to see more member states commit to some actual enumeration of not just recognizing waste pickers, but counting and understanding how many people we're talking about and what their material impact is, so that we can make that visible and be able to defend our livelihoods a little bit more.
To better understand how the world is engaging with the Global Plastics Treaty discussion from an international public policy perspective, I spoke with Clara Vazex, the Deputy Director of Policy Development and Analysis at CalRecycle, California's Department of Resources, Recycling, and Recovery. Clara, with your extensive experience in both the California State Senate and the French National Assembly, how do you see the differences in environmental policy approaches between the U.S. and Europe as they influence the Global Plastics Treaty?
Yeah, so I think they're pretty different, obviously, and we're talking, I work in California, but we're talking about the federal level here. The European Union has very ambitious goals, like environmental goals, and they're used to work as a unified voice towards those goals. And I think they're pushing for maybe a more ambitious agenda than America is.
Yeah.
but I also know that America has a lot of different, all the states in the US have also a very strong voice pushing for the federal government to have a similar position. And California is obviously one of the strongest voice pushing here the agenda. So I do think the discussions are going to be challenging, but I'm hoping that we all come to the same page here.
Talk to us a little bit more about the complexities of statewide implementation of recycling and resource recovery initiatives, both through the lens of your kind of previous roles on the legislative side and now kind of viewing it through this potential for an international legislative framework.
It's interesting because being on the leg side, a lot of elected officials are also very ambitious goals and really want to push for recycling targets, taking plastic over especially. And being now on the regulatory side at CalRecycle, it's good for me to like understand how the implementation part of things is not as easy as we would think when we try to set up those goals. So I would say we need to keep pushing for ambitious targets, but we also want to make sure that the language of policy that are being drafted addresses the full cycle of any of the material streams that we are trying to recycle, recover, reuse.
Yeah.
And that's pretty complex. And I would say having a very complementary, comprehensive approach when we create this language of several bills that a lot of our California members are working on is essential. The negotiations on the plastic treaty are amazing. Like, I'm really happy that the UNEP and the UN created this is being negotiated. I think this is going to add like a foundation to the implementation and legislative initiative that we're taking in California. And it's just a confirmation that this is top on our agenda and it should be a top policy priority, really, both at a state and federal level. So I think any international initiatives are just a demonstration that we can really weight in creating more policy and reinforcing the policy that we already have in place. So it's a great framework and hopefully also adds a layer of mandates once the treaty is being designed and seeing what is the level of the mandates that it's going to bring to different countries around the world. That might help having a better support from the federal government as well, because they'll have to comply.
Are there specific initiatives from California that you are advocating for at INC with the hopes of advancing them within the global treaty?
We're not member state, right? We're just subnational government. And we are not part of any coalition at this point. We've been reached out to be part of a subnational coalition, but haven't made that decision yet. So right now it's more just increasing our visibility and highlighting a lot of our successes and challenges that we've had in California, which is great because it's I think California voice is needed here, even if it's not through an official negotiating party. But Plastic and Pollution Packaging Act is definitely the implementation regulation that we're like working actively on right now.
Thank you for tuning into this very special and slightly noisy episode of Redemption, where we heard powerful insights from the folks at the forefront of the Global Plastics Treaty negotiations and learned about the critical role of waste pickers in shaping a waste-free world. This episode marks a shift in our podcast journey, where we begin to venture beyond the confines of our DRS for Doers guide. We're diving into the broader implications of well-executed, sometimes poorly executed, circular material management policies and what it means for you and the world at large. As countries across the globe strive to come to a consensus on how to tackle the global waste crisis and climate change with a legally binding instrument in the works to address plastic pollution, this could be a pivotal year, one that hopefully rewrites how we manage our waste, but more importantly, how we regard our resources. Stay tuned for more insightful discussions and thought-provoking content on redemption. In the meantime, don't forget to visit bottlebillreimagined.org to download the guide to modern deposit return systems and subscribe to our newsletter, Bottle Bill Common Ground. You can also leave a review on redemption wherever you listen to your podcasts. And remember, working together from a common ground of knowledge, we can move good initiatives forward.